Let's begin with a reminder. You don't exist in a vacuum. Your awareness matters. Your choices matter. But culture isn't built alone. It's built in relationship, in repetition, in the patterns between people. You've done the inner work. Now comes the collective part. The question is no longer just, what do I see? But what do we create together? Companies love to talk about culture. They print values on posters, they hire consultants, they launch trainings. But culture isn't what's said, it's what's felt. It's who gets heard, who gets promoted, who gets protected when mistakes are made. Culture isn't what's declared, it's what's tolerated. Think of bias incidents as weather, a bad meeting, a racist comment, a microaggression. But the real work is in the climate, the long-term conditions that allow those moments to grow or to dissolve. You don't fix a storm by naming it. You fix the atmosphere, and that takes intention. Walk into any workspace, any classroom, any community, and you'll find two groups, those who feel safe and those who feel like they have to perform safety. To laugh when it's not funny, to nod when they're dismissed, to stay silent, because speaking has always cost more than swallowing it. That gap is where unconscious bias lives, and that gap is what culture must address. It's not enough to have a seat at the table if your voice is always the one overlooked. It's not inclusion if you're constantly explaining your perspective to people who've never had to explain theirs. True belonging means you don't have to translate yourself to be heard. You don't have to code switch to be accepted. You don't have to shrink to make others comfortable. Every system protects its defaults, and every culture, left unchecked, will reflect the comfort of the most powerful. That's not cruelty, it's gravity. To build conscious culture, you have to actively disrupt that pull. You have to design for difference, not just accommodate it. Because fair isn't giving everyone the same thing, it's giving everyone what they need to fully show up. You can't bias-proof a culture, that's fantasy. Bias is human, it shows up, it leaks through. Even in the best rooms from the best people. What matters is how the room holds it. Is there space for naming harm without retaliation? Is there a protocol for repair? Is there a willingness to listen without collapsing? You don't need perfection. You need friction that leads to growth. People think psychological safety is about being nice. It's not. It's about clarity, consistency. Consequences that aren't arbitrary. It's about knowing that if I speak up, I won't be punished, I won't be ignored, and I won't be labeled as difficult. That kind of safety isn't a feeling, it's a structure, and it's built by every person in the room. In toxic cultures, people don't stop talking, they just stop talking out loud. They whisper. They warn newcomers. They avoid certain people. They navigate around the problem because addressing it head-on only brings trouble. If people are whispering instead of speaking, your culture isn't working. Silence is not peace. It's just privatized fear. If you hold power as a manager, as a teacher, as a founder, you won't see everything. That's not your fault. But it is your responsibility. You need mirrors, people who will tell you the truth, people who trust that your ego can handle it. And if no one is offering that reflection, you're not leading, you're managing your image. In most cultures, bias gets interrupted by the same people who are hurt by it. They speak up, they correct, they carry the weight. But every time they do, they pay a cost. In energy, in reputation, in safety. If you want a conscious culture, don't just empower people to speak, back them up when they do. Bias isn't always a person. Sometimes it's a vibe, a tone, an unspoken rule. Who speaks first? Who gets interrupted? Who takes credit? Who makes the final call? Every room has its gravity, and unless you're intentional, that gravity will pull everyone into the same old orbit. It's tempting to think culture lives in mission statements, retreats, and keynote speeches, but it lives in smaller places. Who you mentor, who you give a second chance to, who you invite to lunch, whose silence you check in on. Culture is the echo of a thousand tiny decisions. You can hire a diverse team and still build a biased culture. Representation matters, but it's not the end game, it's the floor. The real test is what happens after they arrive. Are they supported, listened to, respected when they disagree? Tokenism brings people in. Belonging keeps them there. So stop here. Look around your spaces. What do you normalize? What gets rewarded? Who gets included without effort? And who has to work twice as hard just to stay? This is where unconscious bias becomes conscious culture, not by removing people, but by rethinking the patterns we no longer notice. Culture isn't built by job titles. It's built by tone, by presence, by what you allow and what you question. You don't need to be a leader to be a signal. How you listen, how you redirect, how you hold the room when it gets tense, that's culture in motion. At the weekly meeting, the manager paused. Instead of asking, "Any feedback?" he asked, "What's something we're not seeing because of how we're used to doing things?" That one sentence shifted the tone. People leaned in. New voices emerged. It didn't solve everything, but it signaled curiosity lives here. Disagreement is safe here. And that's where culture begins to bend. People don't always quit jobs. They quit atmospheres. They leave meetings where their ideas are stolen. Slack threads where their jokes fall flat. Projects where their feedback is received like an attack. The official reason is often vague, looking for something new. But the real reason? Exhaustion. From being the only one trying to make the culture better while surviving it. We track revenue, retention, engagement. But we rarely track who speaks least, who gets interrupted most, who brings concerns, and who leaves quietly. Bias hides in what we don't measure. So if you're serious about culture, start counting what's inconvenient. That's where the truth lives. In some rooms, being difficult is a sign of strength, a bold visionary, a challenger. In other rooms, difficult is a whispered warning, a risk, a reason to be passed over. Same behavior, different frame. If your culture only makes space for some kinds of difficulty, it's not making space for difference. It's making space for hierarchy. You don't transform a culture overnight. There is no grand reveal, no switch to flip. Change comes slow. Through uncomfortable meetings, through awkward pauses, through the long, steady work of doing things differently, even when no one claps. It's not speed that matters, it's steadiness. Every time someone crosses a line, you have a choice. Will you ignore it, laugh it off, move on quickly, or will you say, "We don't do that here"? The moment may pass, but the signal stays. Who you protect tells everyone else what's safe to be. They won't remember every policy, every memo, every team-building activity, but they will remember how a room made them feel, if their voice mattered, if their presence was wanted or merely tolerated. Culture is emotional architecture. It holds people, or it wears them down. You don't stumble into an inclusive space. You build it, on purpose, through friction, with language that invites, with accountability that doesn't humiliate. You design it, test it, adjust it, and you build it again tomorrow. Someone will call you in. You'll say the wrong thing. You'll miss a cue. You'll forget a name. That doesn't mean you're failing. It means you're doing it for real. The only way to build culture is to stay in the work after the applause fades. Not performative, but persistent. She made a mistake, a real one. It hurt someone. Instead of silence or shame, her team leader said, "Let's talk about how to move forward, not just for you, but for them." It wasn't soft, it wasn't harsh, it was honest. And in that space, a new norm was planted. That's how culture grows, not from perfection, but from repair. You may never know what your pause made possible, what your presence made bearable, what your challenge made thinkable. Culture shifts quietly until one day the room sounds entirely different, feels different, breathes easier. You won't always get credit, but you weren't doing it for that anyway. When people talk about legacy, they imagine speeches, achievements, milestones. But legacy is quieter than that. It's how you show up in a meeting that's going sideways. It's who you call in when no one's watching. It's what you normalize when you think no one's keeping score. That's the real footprint. That's the culture you leave behind. There is no final module, no certificate, no point at which you can say, "I have arrived." Culture is alive. It shifts with every new voice, every new moment. So your job is not to finish the work. It's to stay faithful to it, to show up again and again and again. You started by naming the fog. You saw the frame. You removed the mask. You tracked the micro movements. You practiced the pause. Now you build. Not alone. Not perfectly, but with intention. Because bias doesn't dissolve with awareness. It transforms the architecture, with culture, with you. Not just the you who listens, but the you who leads. Welcome to the work.